structure that kept us connected, right? And you saw that sort of work evolve through the anti-nuclear movement, the movement to stop the U.S. war in Central Americas, the ACT UP movement, the Earth First movement. All of that work, you know, was laying that groundwork in all these different areas. And that was really 70s, right? Going into the 80s. No, really, 70s into the 80s. For me, I went from those movements, the Central America movement, I ended up moving into the labor movement in the 90s, and particularly working with the Justice for Janitors campaign. But why I think that was particularly important, because that was really a new model in labor organizing, using direct action, nonviolent direct action, civil disobedience, strategic campaigns, strikes, and these major comprehensive campaigns, and it was incredibly effective and successful. And so, again, moving into that, you know, some synergy between the two, because we were working with the janitors, literally shutting bridges down, buildings down, cities down, creating, you know, political crises for people.
Particularly in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C., but this happened in Los Angeles, Boston, Denver. There were other cities where it was organizing, and it was just growing, right, because it took time, right? Now, almost the entire country, the janitors are organized, and not only in many cities. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know this. I should check the facts. But many of the major cities are organized, and then maybe the suburbs are organized. And now it's not just janitors, but it's also the window washers and the security officers, because over the years, using those strategies, they've built power and more density in the unions, and because it was an effective model. But so in the 90s, I was doing that, but people were still, you know, there was still the environmental, there was all the headwaters work that was happening. And what I saw is that come Seattle in 1999, well, actually, you know, sorry, I'm not, it's early morning, more coffee. You also, during the 90s, you had the Zapatista movement and the beginning of this global justice movement. There was an entity called People's Global Action. So what happened is that we were beginning to see these sort of networks spread across the world, but they were staying connected. And so when Seattle happened, the World Trade Organization in Seattle, you know, all of the threads in the United States, from the radical environmentalist to the women's movement to the anti-war movement, everybody came. And people were doing actions all around the world. And that really was a moment where this whole effort went at a whole nother level. So you saw the global justice movement. During this time, more and more nonprofits are growing up. More and more organizations of people of color are building their power. Like, our movements have so many more organizations and infrastructure than, I believe, in the past. And so it's now created an era through the global justice movement where there's a lot more efforts to sort of cross these different lines, recognizing that we have more power and we can figure out how to be in relationship with one another. And then I would say, again, just in the evolution of it, you know, if you looked at that through the 2000s as the global justice, because this was happening around the world, you know, this decade, as I look at it, was kicked off with Tunisia and then the Arab Spring, which is like a whole nother evolution. You know, so you can see how as you build power and organization and more strength and movements, you can have the ability to hold space at larger and larger ways, right? So you saw in Egypt this incredible mobilizations of millions of people that took over the center of the city in Cairo with the community self-organizing, right? Because this is about self-organization in all of these models. It's not waiting for somebody else to tell us. It's not waiting for permission. It's not waiting, you know, it's like self-organizing, working collectively, working in solidarity. And so I see that as like, look at what happened here. And now where do we want to be in 10 years? When the next decade kicks off, where do we want to be and what do we have to do in this 10 years to make it possible for us to continue to amass those numbers? And with the emergence of Occupy, which again had its roots in a lot of community-based organizing against the banks and accountability, as well as the direct action threads, it's continuing to permeate. And that will rise again, too, in a different way. And it showed us again in this country that we can have a vast reach and be in cities, whether it be rural or major urban areas or small urban areas, and do collective work. So I think it's really exciting what is ahead for us.
Collective work. That is, in fact, what is ahead for us, if we choose it, right? You're listening to this great interview, Paul Roland interviewing Lisa Fithian about her experiences, her knowledge, her expertise, her involvement in organizing over the last four decades. And you're listening to it on KBOO, Community Radio. I'm Ani. I'm here with Justin. And we are asking for your membership this morning at KBOO because you are the piece that keeps us independent, that keeps us listener supported, that keeps us grassroots. And right now is a very important time to call because you can double the impact of your donation between 9 and 10:30 this morning. We only have an hour and a half to make this $500 match. KBOO member John Pokala has made a very generous offer to match the next $500 in donations called in now in the next hour and a half. You can start that ball rolling by calling us at 877-500-5266. Thanks very much to John Pokala, a wonderful KBOO member and volunteer. And we want to thank you. Go ahead and meet John's generous match, 877-500-5266. Say yes to this program, yes to the Radio Zine, each and every weekday produced by volunteers from their passion because they are involved in their communities. They have a passion for bringing stories to the air and information that you can use so that we can live enriched lives, we can live informed lives, and we can make right decisions about changing the world together. It's all about collective action, and right now you can be a part of that at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
That's right. That's a toll-free number, 877-500-5266, to continue this work of culture building, keeping people connected. That's what KBOO has been doing for over 23 million commercial-free minutes, and we have enough community support that generous members like John Pokala will match your donation, dear listeners. Please call in right now. We have less than $10,000 to go. We are almost done, but the climb is steepest closest to the summit. We have till 4 p.m. today. We're asking you to call. If you give $10, that's $20. If you give $20, that's $40. If you give $100, that's $200. Won't you call us right now, toll free, 877-500-5266. We've been here doing this for so long precisely because of your support. You can do that online at kboo.fm, or you can call us toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
So let me go back to one point in there. You mentioned a couple times in your talks that pre-9/11, that post-Seattle, pre-9/11, that brief window of time. So there was this whole development, and you talked about Prague, and there was Geneva, and it had gone before. In fact, just a footnote, from my understanding, obviously as an Earth Firster, I'm always like keen to not set the record straight, but just to say what I think the role of Earth First was. Actually, Mike Rozelle, I think, was one of the first people to like start protesting at the World Bank, the IMF. That analysis actually grew out of Earth First, because we started to see that they were cutting our forests. People started learning about the companies, corporations that were cutting the forests in the Northwest or wherever. And they started saying, oh, they cut everything here. Now they're in Siberia. Now they're in Mexico. Now they're in Indonesia or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they started to say, oh, it's not just these corporations. It's the Import-Export Bank, it's the World Bank, it's not just logging companies, it's dam building, it's this and that. And they started making alliances with indigenous people, and then that was a big part of the whole confluence in the Rainforest Action Network, et cetera, et cetera. So the global analysis or whatever, understanding also came, which I don't think a lot of people recognize, also came out of the Earth First Movement, and then the anti-sweatshop movement, et cetera. There's a lot of confluences, not just of action and organizing, but of analysis as well. So that whole global analysis led to the understanding that there's these big international organizations that were creating the context in which these destructive things could go forward. So people started protesting at them. People learned about the World Trade Organization, before the General Agreement on Tariff and Trades, et cetera. So the strategy of going to these summits is where I'm getting. That led to Seattle, that led to all these different places. And then there fairly soon emerged a critique of that. Oh, you know, are we putting too much energy in just going to these summits? So you were in D.C. and you mentioned that there was these agreements that were made about the protests against the IMF World Bank coming up in the fall, that were going to come up in the fall of 2001 between some of the different elements. And from my understanding, there's the analysis of, oh, what do we do that's not just going to these big summits? How do we bring it to home? So there were plans to occupy DC General Hospital, which was going to be privatized or shut down, And that was like a big blow to Washington, D.C., poor people, people of color. So the question is, A, talk a little bit about these agreements between different ideological people with different organizing models, and talk about what happened in 2001.
So again, in my experience with the nonviolent direct action movements, there have always been some set of agreements or guidelines that hold us together when we do action for the purpose of building trust and knowing what to expect from one another. We don't consider them philosophical or anything else. When we hit Seattle, whole different thing played out, right? And there was this emergence. Well, actually, it wasn't just Seattle. This stuff played out back in the 1980s when we were shutting down the Pentagon even, right? Where different protesters called each other the peace police or whatever, these dynamics of where we are in the streets together and people are engaging in different tactics. And when people don't agree with those tactics, how that all plays out, right? So this is happens again and again in our movements, particularly not since Seattle, but that's been the next round, let's just say. So what happened is that when hierarchical organizations, they can work with one another really well because they know who they are, they have phone numbers, they have desks, they can be accountable or in theory know how to be accountable. They've got titles, right? And they don't know how to relate to horizontal movements because they don't know who's in charge, they don't know how to be, they don't know where they do their work, right? It's a whole different thing. And so there's like this inherent fear that they have of working with horizontal movements. And so what we learned and evolved, because after the World Trade Organization's success of that shutdown, you know, people did want to be in greater relationship to one another. So what we did is we brought people who identified to the tactic of Black Bloc and people from nonprofits and people from the labor union, the AFL in particular, to have a dialogue about what would we need from one another. Like, we're clearly not going to agree necessarily on some things, but we can agree that we are opposed to this. We don't want this. So what do we need to expect from one another? And that evolved it to a different thing of called more solidarity practices. And we looked at both personal and political, and it'd be things like, you know, help anybody that is hurt. Turn no one over to the police. Whether you don't ever speak publicly negatively about other people's tactics, only talk about yours. Like, so it's things like that. It's like some basic common sense things that we can do and commit to do that will allow us to be in relationship. And it felt pretty like that could help. And what happened is that 9/11 came, blew that coalition apart, but the work of using principled agreements has continued forward. In fact, at the Free Trade Area of America, we actually brought them back up again and, in fact, did reach agreements with the labor movements and the nonprofits. I mean, they had people at our spokes council meetings. So these evolutions can take place, or these moments and times where we can be in relationship. But, you know, it's a lot of work because we do have differences.
And it usually seems to come over just over these specific moments.
Right. And that's one of the things that's so hard to really talk about this stuff is because there's absolutely no question that some of the tactics that are happening that are divisive are as a result of government provocateurs. Period. End of story.
Because that's interesting because, you know, I've heard that. I heard that in Italy endlessly over Genova.
Yeah.
It's just, and but then it's like you never, it's like so many things. You never know unless you were actually there or see a film of it. But even then.
Okay, so what we do know in the past 5 years or 10 years is that three young men at the RNC in 2008, Brad and David, were set up by an informant. Matt DePalma was also set up by another informant, both for Molotov cocktail charges, both of which, you know, at least in Matt DePalma, the dude helped, right? Then you've got the Cleveland Five, you've got the NATO Three now, right? You've got all these young white men who are in trouble with the federal government on charges that have to do with whatever. That's what we're seeing. So all that being said and done is that there is always going to be this, it's going to be there.
And that was Lisa Fithian speaking with Paul Rowland on Political Perspectives this morning here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Ani. I'm here with Justin. And we are excited to be here on this last day of the winter membership drive for KBOO in 2014. This is when we really need to hear from you to push us over the top. We have less than $10,000 to go. We need to get that by 4 o'clock this afternoon. And right now, John Pokola is making that easier. He is a KBOO member, and he's made a very generous offer to match the next $500 to come in the next hour and a half. So please do give us a call right now and double your contribution to KBOO by making John's match. 877 500 5266 is the number to call, or you can join us online at kboo.fm. I want to thank Ryan in Portland for renewing his membership. And, you know, we want your participation. Now you've been resistant this long. Wait no longer. This is your moment. Please do participate in KBOO Community Radio right now, because you are our grassroots. You are what keeps us vital, alive, and independent. Right now, it's your contributions that really do make it happen. 877-500-5266.
The very act of getting involved right now doubles your money. That's a really special thing. This vital community radio project, which, you know, a lot of people said for a long time it can't be done. You can't give away your signature product. Let the consumers of the product put their own price on it and send it in if they feel like it. And yet, 23 million commercial-free minutes later, we're still here asking for your membership at 877-500-5266. I was thinking about how many precious people have made this possible. We've been listening to Lisa Loving earlier, one of our national treasures, national community radio treasures. But we're also listening to Paul Rowland right now. And you got to understand, Paul Rowland has been doing this for a long time here at KBOO. He is a true citizen journalist. That doesn't make him old. It makes him experienced. He received his training here. He has done countless interviews. He answers the phones here in the membership drive. He answers the phones working reception. We have so many treasures here. And what we're asking you folks in Radioland to do is to give a small amount of money to make sure we can train thousands of more treasures, to make sure we can reach thousands of more treasures who are out there in Radio Land. Will you do that, please? John Pokola will double your money. Will you think about how many treasures are being activated, are being empowered, are being received out there in the ether? Please call right now, 877-500-5266. Never have such small contributions gone so far to transform so many lives. If you don't want to talk to us, that's fine. Do it online at kboo.fm. But we are waiting for you to call up and introduce yourself to become part of this tremendous group of treasures. Toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
It takes all of us working together. We've been listening to this interview about movement building and about what it takes to participate, what it takes to really get around to the work of social change, to actually make the world a better place. Well, you know, KBOO is all about that. KBOO's program charter actually has in its mix our stated inherent values, which are peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. If you value those values, right? I mean, we are upfront about it. We are a media institution with those values at heart. If those are values you share, please support it with your financial backing right now. We do need to hear from you at 877-500-5266.
Ani, my dear friend and fellow treasure, I would like to take it one step further. It's not if they value these values, Ani. They value them. That's why they're listening. That's why they can't bear the shrieking heads on the right side of the dial. That's why they don't go to Walmart. That's why they engage in checkbook activism. That's why they help their fellow neighbors and their communities to get empowered and to be involved. There's no ifs anymore. They've been listening for a long time. So please call right now. I don't mean to take you to task there. I just think it's time for people to realize how far such a small amount of money goes. Toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
And we absolutely welcome you to come on in and join us physically this morning at 20 Southeast 8th. We'd love to show you around the studios. We'd love to show you exactly where your money goes, because we know it's important to you and we want your participation. The more you know about KBOO, really, the more you'll be inclined to get involved and really give generously, because in fact, we are the little radio station that can and that does every day with your support and with our volunteers producing the content that you have grown to rely on. 877-500-5266. Do make that call right now. Consider giving in a monthly way, just $5 a month, $15 a month, $35 a month, what you can afford. We would love to accept. Please give us a call right now. 877-500-5266. Now we're going back to Lisa Fithian speaking with Paul Rowland.
So let's get back to this agreements it seems like there's this recurrence of like ideological splits and difficulties working together based upon, this is an extremely complex argument, but what it seems like, okay, these agreements are good, but they seem like basically ad hoc. And what seems like doesn't really happen that much, and I see it, I've seen it everywhere. I saw it living in Italy, I saw it before, I see it now, I saw it within Earth First, I saw it between Earth First and other groups, between other groups and other groups, between, you know. Do you think it might be helpful if we actually addressed more directly or somehow found some way of coming together to address either ideological or organizational or worldview or whatever differences? It just seems like it keeps coming back to bite us.
I would love that to happen, but I think this is why I don't know that it will, because it's fundamentally about a different view of power and how we want to organize in the world. The direct action movements, the horizontal movements, the consensus-based movements are trying to build that horizontal power where everybody has agency and it's collective and solidarity. Any political party, right, because a lot of those groups actually are in political parties, it's different from the Democrats and Republicans, many or cadre organizations are organized on a hierarchical model. It is a leadership top-down model and not particularly democratic, right? And I don't, and you can say that about the Democrats or the Republicans as well. But so, and again, I don't mean any disrespect to any of these parties, but if your whole way of being requires the status quo to be one of getting people to agree to your party line, to your particular worldview, and to work in the, you know, it will attract some people, but it's never going to attract, it's never, I don't believe it will ever get to the masses because it's too narrow. It has to be one way, whereas I believe the structures at the horizontal moves creates a space where you can have that diversity and political perspective. So what you see is that whenever the horizontal movements are organizing, they all come. But when they organize, nobody else comes except them. And since they're fundamentally a recruitment model to their worldview, that's the only way they can be in relationship to us, is to try and recruit and build their worldview. And so I have seen over the years solid coalitions be destroyed. Right? And so while I don't mean to have disrespect, I also have over the years, well, let me just say this, that is not the way I choose to work. And so I keep my energy over here. And I don't believe in trying to take other people's work down, but I have seen over the years that organizations that work in that way have done a lot to take other groups down.
Right, but it seems like what you're fundamentally, I'm sure you're familiar with the term recuperation, which is sort of a more European term for co-optation.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I look at things sort of like the film The Matrix in a way, in that, you know, not that that actually exists, that we're actually, you know, we're actually like, you know, these batteries for this, you know, huge machine, and mm-hmm. that our consciousness, you know, we're actually like not really here now. But there's an element of that, sort of a metaphorical, I guess, that seems like either the world exists sort of like The Matrix or it doesn't. Either there are these systems of not just oppression, I think it's even deeper than oppression. It's like basically conditioning, basically. Oppression is part of it, racism is part of it, sexism, but it's like there's a machine of conditioning, basically, that underlines everything. So I guess, to me, what I hear you say is that basically, in some sense, these hierarchical organizations are basically participating in this machine of conditioning in some sense, if you get my language.
Absolutely.
But what that says is that in some sense, whoever we think we are somehow somewhat, to some extent, fully free of that.
No.
And that they're not, and so we have to help free them.
No. No, I really don't see it that way. None of us are free. So a couple different things. We live in an empire. I believe the empire has a structure. I believe it has a foundation. This is part of what I'm doing in my book, Deconstructing Empire. And I believe we can take it apart. Just like, as I've learned from Ron Chisholm from the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond, racism was an arrangement. It was an agreement. It was done to people. So if it was done to us, then we can undo it if we understand what was done and how it works. Right? So you just have to understand how these things are and how they work. And then we can deconstruct them. And when I train, that structure, that empire, it's a real thing out there, and it's internal in ourselves because we came up through it. So none of us can escape it. I talked about that earlier. So I think the difference is this, is that anybody that is working in a hierarchical organization, even if they don't agree with the state's program, has a basic self-interest in maintaining things the way they are. Hierarchical organizations are self-perpetuating.
Paychecks are powerful
right,
things.
Right, rocking the boat is, depending on how far you go, right? Just, there's a spectrum. Horizontal groups, it's not that we're free of that, right? It's endemic. The difference is, though, is I think people here have some little bit more level of consciousness and some, for whatever reason, a vision that we could have another way, right? Because, you know, we don't want to live under the foot of oppression, right? But we all do. And so, and I don't think we're necessarily about recruiting. I mean, although I do want to say that we do need to be more conscious about not only recruiting in the sense of extending invitations or agitating to bring people in, or actually I want to say that differently, because I'm learning too. You know, I learn and grow all the time. And what I just said is actually part of the problem with the model, right? It's that outreach thing. And so again, what I learned through Occupy, through a lot of people doing racial justice work, is that the importance of organizing at the margins, right? And as you organize at the margins and you build power, and as you come towards the center and consolidating your power, you know, everybody's, you know, it's like everybody has to come with you. But if you're in the center reaching out, it's just way more work. So it's where do we focus and put our energies? And I think what Occupy did was like that open invitation, right? When there's something real, it's like an open, and everybody comes. And so then how do you really organize and support that? So the other thing about Occupy, which I think was problematic early on related to this, is they were like, there are no leaders. And that is just not reality. Because the truth is, and Joe Freeman wrote that famous article years back, The Tyranny of Structurelessness, is that there will always be people who are the organizers or leaders are out front. And if you don't make a formal structure, it becomes informal leadership, which means it's going to be an abuse of power. And so I believe that leadership is really about creating the type of world where people can realize their potential and their agency. And I think when people feel like they're coming into work that's investing in them, that they're going to be better, they're going to be more, have more meaningful lives, they want to stay in. And so I think the idea of recruitment and leadership is not about getting somebody to just be part of our party line or vote on our platform, you know, or elect our leadership, but it's about getting them to become real actors and powerful in their own lives. Because that's, you know, what we're going to need. We need millions of really powerful people that have consciousness around these systems and these structures, and that we're working together, you know, to not only dismantle them, while we're creating these structures of liberation, right? It's a simultaneous process. You can't do one without the other. Because if the state comes down and we don't, and people ask, where do I get my bread? Right? It's not going to happen, right? So we have to be able to figure out how we're building up. And if you look at this country and the world, it is what's happening. There are all these bottom-up efforts, co-ops. We're building a sort of a new, I'm not talking about green capitalism, but there are these other economies that are working in many places around the world, and there's more of them than there used to be, right? The trick is not to be in either or space. If you're only doing the building stuff, right, it's an easy life. But if we're all there, no one's going to continue to confront the structures that are oppressing us, right? So,
okay, my experience with a lot of this was in the forest protection movement, and I've had this discussion endless times in some very interesting contexts. And it repeats itself seemingly throughout all these different areas. Basically, without Earth First, it wouldn't have become a big issue, you know, the ancient forests or the old growth forests or whatever, because no one really knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so we brought attention and we brought creativity and energy. But then what happened is this grinding process of recuperation, I call it, or, you know, the big environmental organizations basically kind of took the issue over, basically, and we don't need to go into all that. But, and that seems to be what happens. That happened, you know, with the union movement. It happens with, I say it happened, it seems like it happens with the gay movement. It seems like it happens with the women's movement. It seems like it happens with any movement.
It happened to Occupy.
It happened to Occupy, yes. The, what was that, the something spring, the 99% spring or something mm-hmm. like that?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not going there.
Should have a long conversation about that sometime.
Oh, long conversations. They're our speciality here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Ani. I'm here with Justin, and we are listening to an interview right now. Paul Rowland speaking with Lisa Fithian, and speaking about her decades of experience as an organizer and how Well, how really effective movements just, gosh darn, coincidentally seem to be co-opted folks who might be a little less radical. That is not what we do here at KBOO Community Radio, my friends. With your support, we stay grassroots and independent and in your face. We are community radio for the masses. And right now, we have a great opportunity for you to become a member and have your contribution matched by a very generous KBOO member. John Pokola has offered to match the next $500 that comes in. And I can tell you that we have more than $300, almost $400 left to make for that match. Right now, we can do it with your call at 877-500-5266. It is collective action that gets the goods. And right now, you need to participate in KBOO Community Radio to keep us strong and independent and relevant, tied to the grassroots, tied to our community, building those bridges together. 877-500-5266.
It's the Hero Zone. That's what we've entered right now. For those of you who've been waiting and you felt that you might be the one to take us over the top, with the last day of the membership drive having arrived, less than $10,000 to go and a matching grant of $500 right now, it's the Hero Zone. Please pick up the phone and call right now. 877-500-5266. KBOO has over 45 years under its belt of challenging apathy. And so we come to you and ask you to directly challenge apathy, to engage in a little checkbook activism, to stand up and be counted, to make sure that access, training, and programming for the people's own airwaves and the real information, the news you're not supposed to know, that that's available in the locality, in the region, and indeed around the world, at KBOO.FM. If you are listening anywhere on earth from a wired box, you can do a secure donation there, or you can call us in North America toll free, 877-500-5266. But you joined with your ears, with your heart, with your mind a long time ago. Now it's a small matter of the bill. Won't you call us right now? We're getting ready to go back to Lisa Fithian and this interview with Paul Rowland, and we are grateful for everyone who has called in so far, particularly to take advantage of this matching gift by John Pokola. Won't you join in right now? 877-500-5266. Please don't wait for someone else to do it. Toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
So, okay, there's twin problems in some sense. Obviously, it's more complicated. There's a problem of resources and there's a problem of consciousness. Okay, and the problem of resources is that the groups that are more hierarchical, that are closer to the funding sources, to the basic productive, whatever, capitalist system, they tend to have more access to these resources. Everybody needs these resources. Obviously, everybody needs money to live, unfortunately, still, mm-hmm. And you need money to do organizing, generally less than maybe some people think. So that's one problem. So when you need resources, you tend to get strings attached. If you're working with people who want to impose their agenda in giving them their resources. On the other hand, in terms of consciousness, to me, it does seem like in the model you're putting forward, there is the opportunity to really to think more freely, frankly, whether or not we do it well, who knows. But when you're trapped in a set where your paycheck is dependent on you towing the party line, obviously, it's just like, but we also need to deny that fact in order to just like live with ourselves. So yeah, it's like, I guess that's what I was getting at, in that it seems to me that we, anyway, maybe you just want to
I think you nailed it in so many ways, Paul. So it's the eternal dilemma that those groups that have the money, the resources, and access to the media, and access even to the government in many different levels, right? Between relationships, et cetera, and consolidation of it there. And we need some of that stuff, right? And there are times over history where that money can be shared and redistributed. I mean, those movements gave Occupy people, a lot of people gave Occupy money. So there have been times where we have benefited, those of us have benefited, and I don't mean me, but have benefited from this, that we've been able to do things. The problem is that the lack of consciousness is also a major issue. And again, this is where it gets to that dilemma, is that people in those organizations are willing to accept less and willing to compromise in ways that we find unacceptable. And so again, it's always the dance to try and pull them as far left as we can, right? And often, the way I see it, and again, I don't like it, I don't want to accept this, but if we don't organize and have a counterbalance to this, we're for sure in big trouble. But if we have a counterbalance to this that can be sophisticated enough to and work with understanding about what we're really working with, and to understand inside and outside strategies, and to understand that the power that we have is actually to shut things down, and that that's really the game changer, not what they do.
Right, I mean, that's what you were talking about yesterday at Laughing House. Shutting, what was it? Shutting things down to open things up.
Exactly.
Just say a little more about that?
Well, just that, you know, so much I believe of what social change is about political space, whether it's physical, emotional, spiritual, on how we take it, how we transform it, whatever. And so part of this work is to be able to get into their spaces in a way that convinces them as to do otherwise. And so these folks have access to those spaces in ways that we don't, right? And so what we did see over the years, and quite frankly, Seattle was an inside-outside strategy, right? And what happened is that, and it has continued in some of the other global justice work, as these folks begin to have more respect. Because that's what happens, is that when we do our work well,
that's exactly
they
what happened with
too.
Us first. That's exactly right. What happened. There was a moment, there's this what I consider this magical moment
where
they're not dumb. Right. It's like they saw, oh, this group, they're like on the front page of the Oregonian. Wow, now they're in National Geographic. Now they're on the New York Times. It's like people are knowing about this.
Right.
Before it was like this total hands off, you know, like keep us at a distance. Then people were actually informally, obviously you gotta be cool with all this stuff. And then that got blown out of the water.
I tell you, that's why I continue to this day to go back and talk about the Pledge of Resistance to stop the U.S. war in Central America, because that was a hybrid movement structure that had the national structures that accounted for organizations and what they're good at. I want some groups to be tracking the policy stuff, you know, potentially, if that's the arena I'm playing in. I can't do that. I don't want to do that, right? So how do you take what all of us do well and then understand that that's only one piece of the pie? So the pledge allowed for that structure at a national level for real collaboration, but was pushed down. That made resources come down as well. But at the grassroots level, it was totally like horizontal affinity group, spokes council, direct action. And the power of that is that those groups were, in some ways, because they were in the structure, they were accountable to that base, because they couldn't do anything without our base. And if the base didn't want to do something, it wasn't going to happen. But we weren't at odds with each other. There was a way in which it was this massive network of a variety of structures all moving collectively.
So did CISPUS come out of that? Or were
no, CISPUS was totally a part of that. But I mean, CISPUS, the Nicaragua Network, NISQA in Guatemala, they all were organizing, and those were the solidarity groups, right? They were working directly to provide support for the people in those countries. They took leadership from people in those countries, including the Sandinistas. And then you had a lot of groups that were the religious groups that were doing a lot of witness for peace on the ground. Then you had a lot of groups which were the policy groups that were working on the funding in Congress. And then you had a lot of the groups that would be considered anti-intervention, who weren't so much about solidarity on the ground, but they were about there should be no U.S. war. Right, so you had all of these sectors, but whatever sector that was doing really committed organizing and not just sort of one thing, were part of the national table, right? And it was essential that all those sectors were there, or else you're going to be out of balance, right? You have to have the solidarity people there, right, as well as the policies. And we had the students involved. And it was a well set up thing. I mean, it had a whole set of, you know, what are the possible things that would happen that would have our entire network. So our entire network of well over 100,000 people, this is long before social media, knew that if X happened, we were all going, right? And so we knew it was a credible threat. 100,000 people were prepared to take action immediately should the U.S. do something. And that was part of the premise behind it, is to let them know that, you know, we're not going to let it happen. And then what we did is we didn't wait to alert the network. We used that network again and again and again in all the organizing that needed to happen to show them we were a credible threat. So we were shutting federal buildings down left and right.
As Lisa Fithian is saying, all sectors must be there or you'll be out of balance. Well, here at KBOO, we're depending on you to keep us in balance and to keep our balance sheets going. And we ask for your support a few times a year. And this is the last day of this winter membership drive. So we're asking for your support right now. If you've been listening to us, you've been waiting, you've been sitting on your hands trying to keep from giving, well, now is the last chance to support KBOO during this winter membership drive. It's a really important time to give. We're really close to our goal, and right now there's a matching period. So now is there's never been a better time to call. 877-500-5266.
So true, Jenka. So very, very true. I'm Ani, and it is my pleasure to be with you this morning, enticing just a few more folks to jump on into the KBOO community family, to be our grassroots support, to keep us connected to the community, to be to help us actually grow and expand what we do, because you want us to. You want us to be here for the community. You know it's an important community voice. You know this is an important access point, and it's so important that you yourself participate. Don't leave it to the next person. Take this opportunity yourself to become a sponsor of KBOO, to become a member of KBOO. You can do that right now by calling 877-500-5266. Becoming a member of Community Radio is so important. Not only do you provide the financial resources that it takes to help us pay our bills, and to make that call this morning, getting your contribution matched by John Pokola. Right now, we have a $500 match on the table. Please do give us a call, 877-500-5266. But not only are you a sponsor and a contributor, but you can be helping with the governance. You can join advisory committees. You can vote for the board of directors. You can run for the board of directors. It is a participatory radio station. We want your participation now. 877-500-5266.
If the concepts that Lisa Fithian is talking about make sense to you, if you understand what we mean when we talk about organizing for social change, we talk about solidarity, show some solidarity with KBOO and support community radio that provides this type of resource on a daily basis. The number to call again is 877-500-5266. You heard Ani and I mention the match from John Pokola. What does that mean? It means that if you give right now in this particular hour of time, you will double your money. That means that when you donate $100, KBOO gets $200. If you can do $5 a month, that's $60, KBOO gets $120. So you double the impact of your gift if you call right now, but this is only for a limited time. So you need to call right now in order to take advantage of this matching gift. 877-500-5266. Keep KBOO in balance. Do your part. We're doing our part, putting together this programming, doing the work behind the scenes. And your part is to give a $5 a month, $10 a month contribution, or $40 basic membership. If you can give $75, that will get you a thank you gift of a flash drive here that we have full of all kinds of exciting content. That can be done as a monthly deduction as well. $625 out of your checking account. You know, join the cool kids here at KBOO. You've seen us around town. You've seen the people with the bumper stickers. Maybe you saw Ren at the Awesome Awards talking about Pledge Drive, the musical. Maybe you saw us. You've seen a concert supported by KBOO. Well, now's the time to give back and to be part of this community and to join the. I'll elevate your Portland experience and come to the next level and be a part of KBOO Community Radio. 877-500-5266.
You know, KBOO is a part of Portland's legacy, and we'd love for you to be a part of KBOO. It is true. In fact, there was an urban studies professor that wrote a book, The Portland Edge, about 8 years ago now, who highlighted KBOO. KBOO has a whole chapter in there about how, in fact, KBOO's programs and access to the airwaves helped to shape the neighborhood system and the very basics that is Portland. KBOO.fm is our website. You can contribute online there or give us a call at 877-500-5266 and help us make this match and support Community Radio as we are in the last $10,000 of our winter membership drive. We are looking for you to help push us over the top.
And we have to do it today. It's the today is the last day. So you've been putting it off. You've been waiting. You've been saying, well, you know, I've got some time. Well, no, this is it. This is the time. We want to say thank you to Rosemary from Lake Oswego and Louise from Portland and Eloise. Thank you so much, folks, for renewing your memberships. If you have not yet renewed your membership and you know that maybe you gave a while ago, you forgot when, well, now's the time to do it again. 877-500-5266. If you've never been a member, do it now. We want to thank Gravy at 3957 North Mississippi, Pasta Works at 3735 Southeast Hawthorne for providing food for our volunteers who are here answering phones, and there are still a couple of lines open, so call up and let's hear those phones ringing as we return back to Lisa Fithian. 877-500-5266.
We're looking for your call right now. And again, you can give monthly, $5 a month, $10 a month, $35 a month. Think about giving a dollar a day for your community radio station. And you can do that very easily. Being a hero of KABU, it's what we need right now. We need a couple more heroes. Give us a call and think about a dollar a day for KABU, a dollar a day for your community. It's not so much, really. It's $31 a month, day in and day out. It adds up.
And double your money right now.
You can do it.
Grant.
877-500-5266. Back to Lisa Fithian and Paul Rowland.
So one thing I think is important to talk about, since we're about out of time, is this whole issue of spokes councils and participatory organizing and action. We've sort of alluded to it, but that seems to be a really crucial part. If we're going to actually have these models actually work, and you have observations about why Occupy ended up having problems, was because of a breakdown in that model. And you said you've learned some things about that over the years.
Right. And what I even learned last night is that it's one thing to talk about it, it's another thing to do it. And when we actually, the university actually practiced a spokes council, it came to life in a new way and people understood it. Like if we only had this intellectual idea, we're missing half of it. You know, we need the embodied experience. And we need to know that it's not going to be comfortable right away, it's not going to be easy right away, because it's foreign to us. It's, you know, antithetical to what we're trained towards, because we are trying to work with equalized power and shared access. So I think that the power of it is that it allows large numbers of people to come together and to work collectively in a directly democratic process to make decisions. And this is where I think some movements have gone astray in spokes councils. They haven't understood that the importance of having everybody in the room. They're like, we just need the spokes, right? Because actions are busy, just bring the spokes, right? But if you don't have the people in the room, it's representative democracy, and then the spokes are really making the decision. But if you do a real process where your group is in the room, proposals get put in, questions get put forward, you work with your group, and you come back to the center with, you know, 10 people speaking instead of 100 people speaking, right? So it's very important, as our numbers get bigger and that energy builds, and then we're building relationships. And just the process, even last night, watching how people, trusting the group is so essential, because especially those of us with white skin privilege, we're trained to just, we're entitled, we speak, we think we know everything, we have da-da-da-da-da-da. And when you work in these ways, you realize you don't have to be the one talking all the time. You don't have to put your ideas in all the time, because somebody else in the room is going to have the same thing, and it will come through. And if it's not coming through, then you can let your spokes know. But it really changes our relationship to that collective process. It's not about, I have to have my voice and I got to get my vote up there. So it takes time to build a culture. And that's the other, it's a culture. And I believe if we do our work, the Pledge of Resistance went on for years, and some of them still exist. You know, we had 200 affinity groups in Boston that came together for regular spokes councils. For years this happened. And they were not just for actions. It was for community building and for emotional processing if we were traumatized. So it was a way to build a new web of relations, a new culture that was affirming, inclusive, and power sharing. I will always advocate for these models, and I was a big advocate in OWS, but what happened in OWS, at least in New York, is that they tried to make the spokes council just for one type of group, working groups, and they tried to set up criteria of whether you determined you were a working group or not. And that eventually it was terrible, because then everybody had to, were they even good criteria, then who got to get in, it was just, so all the thing got on whether you were in or out, and it was fundamentally a disaster. Human beings, we're mammals, we have a limbic system, we are have to be connected. And so the essential question for every single one of us, I don't care what culture you come from, what ethnicity you are, what age you are, when we are in a group, are we on the inside? Do we belong, or are we on the outside? And we all want to be on the inside. We can't survive without one another. And when we're on the outside is when we begin to have these abuses of power and marginalization. So all of our work in every moment has got to be, how do people have access? How do people belong? And if we belong and we're careful, we're going to have a level of security that will allow us to work healthy with one another. But we're all living in these insecure, inferior states that really wreck us. And so I believe these ways of working can be healing to our world. And that's why I continue to do it. And so I think what Occupy learned and what we evolved is that everybody has to have a place at the table. And if you get too big, then you can work in clusters. Right, so there's ways that this structure can grow and grow and grow.
Everybody have a seat at the table, but maybe for the corporation, like the janitors or something should be the one actually at the table, and then the CEO like way, way back.
Oh, but if we keep building this out, then it won't even be that way, right? So
yes,
that's part of the deal.
Listen.
Yeah, I know you know. It's been really great to come here to the Pacific Northwest. It's not an area of the world I spend a lot of time to, and I have great respect for what I have seen from afar in this region and the work that Rising Tide and everyone else in this community has been doing to stop the fossil fuel extraction and transportation and the long work to protect the forests.
And lots of other things.
And many other things, right. And that's the other thing is, like, there's so much going on in the world, we hardly know. We become so siloed. And even I've learned a lot here about the history of Earth First in a way that I didn't fully appreciate before. And, you know, and I guess I would say is that there's every movement that is doing some incredible work, and a lot of it is very similar. We just, right, and that's why I hope that we could get to a place to get beyond just the issues to more the root causes, where racism and capitalism are creating that empire structure that is not going to be good for us. Well, as we see, the world is dying, and talk about human extinction is actually in the air now. And it's a serious thing. And what I do know is that no matter how bad it is, every single one of us have the power to make a change. And all we can do is do the best we can in this lifetime.
Yes, every one of us has the power to make a change. We're asking you to make a change right now by giving KBU a little bit of your change. We have about $300 to go to reach our goal for this hour, and we've got about 4 minutes to do it. That means that three people calling with a $100 contribution, or maybe six people calling with $50, will reach our goal for this hour. So you've been holding out, you've been waiting and not calling. Well, today's the last day of our winter membership drive, and we are really close to our goal. We're trying to raise $94,000. We're within $10,000 of that goal. We need your support in order to make it there. If you could give $1,000, if you could give $100, I would love to see people who could give $20 to support this community radio station, 877-500-5266.
Yeah, you know, I think really we really need to take this horizontal idea that Lisa has been talking about, and that has been going on for quite a while. It's been, if you know, I think Lisa presents a really powerful history and account of the way things, there's really been, despite this enormous power of neoliberalism and of the war machine, there, within that, there's been some continuity, there's been some developments, and always counteracted by the the hierarchical power structure. But we, you know, KBU has been there this whole time. The whole time that she was talking about, since the 70s, KBU has been there, has been giving energy to these movements. That's, you know, KBU plays a really vital role. Community radio across the country and across the world plays a really vital role in community self-development. And that's all Lisa was talking about. And we take this very seriously. And we love it when people join in. We love it when our people respond to the kind of approach that we are putting out there, the kind of ideas that we are sharing, the kind of access that we provide to the community. That's where we're all about community building here. We're, you know, we don't have all the answers. You know, there's all sorts of different sectors. We all have to be involved together. But we do need, you know, during, we come to you during these times during membership drive. That's when we ask you to support the model of community radio that we have been faithful to for 45 years. And the number to call is 877-500-5266. And before I go back to Jenk, I just wanted to kind of, since I have the mic here at the tail end of this interview, just to also remind you that There's some websites you can go to. Lisa Fithian, as you heard, is a longtime organizer, and she's active with the Alliance of Community Trainers, and you can find them at trainersalliance.org. And her website is organizingforpower.org. I didn't put that at the tail end of the interview. I just wanted to get that in.
Yeah, and we've only got a minute left, and we still need $300. So that means we need at least six of you to call at the $50 a year level. And any amount that you give can be done as a monthly deduction. So if you do $60 a year, that's $5 a month from your checking account. If you're a hundredaire like me, if you've got, you know, maybe your paycheck comes in and it's in the hundreds, not in the thousands, but you could afford that $5 a month. If you're a thousandaire, maybe you could do $20 a month to support KBOO. You know, if you've got, you know, 10,000 or more in your bank account, then maybe give KBOO $50 or $100 a month. Whatever you're able to do to keep this community resource going, as Lisa was talking about, we're building a new web of relations, a new way of power sharing, a way of approaching our relationships with each other that's different from this top-down hierarchical structure that we're taught from childhood is the way things are. We can't survive without one another, and KBOO can't survive without you. This is providing everyone a place at the table, as Lisa's been talking about. Again, the number to call, 877-500-5266. It's so important that you participate and be a part of this. And we are in a matching period, so you will double your money. If you could just give $10 a month to KBOO, that's a $120 contribution. That is a pretty substantial amount for KBOO, and it will get us that much closer to meeting this match. We don't want to tell John Pokola that we didn't make the $500 and we have to give him his contribution back. No, we want to make that $500 match, and we know we can do it with your help. If you can do $10 a month, if you could do $20 a month, support KBOO at whatever level is comfortable for you, whatever level will make it so that, you know, you can know you're doing your part, and maybe push yourself a little bit. Maybe you already give $5 a month. Increase that to $10 a month. Support KBOO whatever level you can. 877-500-5266. Lisa and I were organizing together down in New Orleans after Katrina, and that was a really frightening time to be in that city, especially when it came to the media. You turn on the radio in New Orleans after Katrina, and you would hear every single station had the same canned corporate content. We put on an unlicensed station to provide emergency information to people, and the FCC immediately came down and tried to shut us down. That's the importance of independent media, that when you're in a crisis situation, when you're in those type of disasters, then you're not getting the information that you need. But if you have community radio, then you will get it. See, KBOO is there for you in the good times, in the hard times. We're here for you. Can you be here for us? 877-500-5266.
And thank you to Gavin from Portland, a renewing member, and you too, and also to Andrew, a renewing member from Portland. And you too can renew your membership if you haven't done it before. And you can also become a new member if you haven't, you know, if you're new to the area, if you're new to the 90.7 FM or whatever else other frequency you're listening to. If this is something that's kind of exciting, maybe you haven't heard this kind of programming before and you want to know more, then give us your support. 877-500-5266.
Yeah, you know, and like I mentioned, it's so important, especially in crises, when you don't want to just hear commercial canned content. You want real people in the studio providing real information, and that's what community radio can do. That's the power of community radio. We're right here in the studios. We're not just pushing buttons to play some content from somewhere else in the country. We're right here with you in your community. We're your friends and neighbors. We're right down the street. Come and see us. 20 Southeast 8th. We're going to go to Air Cascadia with Chris Andre, and keep those calls coming in. Double your money, 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Jenka. Thank you, Paul. Chris Andre is waiting in the wings to bring you Air Cascadia momentarily. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, featuring an interview with Academy Award filmmaker Oliver Stone. At 11 o'clock, The Food Show will be here with Maggie Stuckey, author of Soup Night. She's talking about her about creating community around a pot of soup. And with no further ado, here comes Air Cascadia.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, February 19th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. First up, I want to thank the engineer today, Tammy Dean Engineering, for us. Thanks so much, Tammy. And thanks also to Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. And I want to also thank everyone who's participated in this what you could call it is direct action or perhaps indirect action. We do have an effect, what we've been doing for years and years. The landscape of radio and media in general has changed entirely. KBOO is still here. And we still continue to morph and change and try to and keep ahead of the curve. The number to call to be part of that is 1-877-500-5266. And hey, everybody, this is an impromptu contest, which I didn't have a chance to run past the powers that be. But I'll toss $250 into the pot if you can guess how many Superfund sites we really have in Oregon. We think about the Willamette River, and it's come to what, you know, of course, it's certainly come to the attention of more than just the activist community recently with the threat of oil spills and possible coal ash events happening in our river systems. So what do you think? It's worse than you think, by the way, just a hint. The rest of the headlines, before we get into that, of course, always, always get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. And powerful members of the Washington State Senate are on board. They've cooked up a plan to tax crude oil shipped into the state by rail. The idea is they're going to raise a little money in case of an oil spill. Seems like they may already know something that we don't know, or perhaps they're going to use the money to just dump it in the river and soak up the oil. Because in the end, there's no amount of money